certainly want to extend my appreciation for being able to bring you a lesson in Alan's absence this morning, and I'll mention a little bit more about this later. But there's something I want to say up front as a, I'll call it a disclaimer, especially since we have visitors with us. The topics we're going to be dealing with this morning are highly, very highly politically charged, a very strong political component. Not only is there a strong political component, but there's also a very, very strong emotional component as well. The kinds of topics we're talking about are very divisive in our country these days. And I certainly am not trying to, you know, unnecessarily offend anyone, nor am I trying to take a political stand on these topics. Really want to try first and foremost to see what the Bible has to say about these things to us as Christians. The title, if you will, of today's sermon is A Sign of the Times. Now, when you hear the word sign, your mind might go in a couple different directions. One direction might be like a physical sign, like traffic signs, right? The other direction you might want to go is related to symptoms, you know, signs of an illness, for instance, as the chart shows. And the lesson this morning really kind of combines both together, both a physical sign that we'll see in a few moments, as well as kind of what it represents. The physical sign I mentioned, I noticed, hard to tell, a few years ago, 3 years, 5 years, 4 years, something like that. And you can kind of see them in people's front yards. That's this sign. Now, admittedly, some of the font coloring is off, and you might not be able to see all the words, so let me just kind of briefly read it. In this house, we believe, number one, Black Lives Matter, women's rights are human rights, no human is illegal, science is real, love is love, kindness is everything. There's a lot in that to unpack. With two questions kind of first and foremost that we should have in our minds. What are they saying? I mean, often if you have like, you know, one word, I mean, you get here, and I know you can't read it, you know, love is love. What does that mean? Yeah. What are they really saying? What does this, you know, what does this sign mean? And secondarily, what does it imply about the people who put it in their front yard? Or what does it say about, you know, America as a whole or society as a whole? So I went off and I did some research and come to find out it is indeed a very recent kind of thing. According to one source I found on the internet, this sign was originally created, and you kind of see the original right here, by a woman who lived in Madison, Wisconsin, in November of 2016. So we're talking about something that's, you know, only like 5 or 6 years old. And of key point, she allegedly created this sign the night Trump was elected. At least the homemade sign. And then I think the next day or within a couple days got with, you know, some other people and, you know, crafted up a more aesthetically kind of pleasing, you know, kind of sign. And at least according to this one internet source, this sign, if you will, is quote-unquote one of the more enduring legacies of Trump-era resistance, which I thought was kind of interesting. So as I said at the very beginning, what we want to focus on today is not to lobby for a particular political view, a particular political view or party. Certainly we don't want to question anyone's, you know, sincerity. Don't, as I said before, don't want to unnecessarily offend them, etc. But we do want to focus on what does the Bible have to say? You know, what's the scriptural perspective on these things And also we want to be somewhat sensitive to current events, even though they may be political, be sensitive to them from a spiritual perspective, biblical perspective, from a spiritual discernment perspective. So the first statement on the list was, quote unquote, Black Lives Matter, which I think everyone associates with various protests that were against certain police actions with particularly black suspects. And a lot of people resonated with that, very concerned. People resonated with that and went out in protest about these, you know, various actions. And that sounds good because, you know, police brutality, bad thing. Certainly sounds good, but there was more to it than that, much more. As it turned out, now, even though things have kind of calmed down since then, in the middle of this, you know, 2-3 years ago, all kinds of riots, arson, looting, attacks on police, cars, attacks on police, etc. In fact, if a couple years ago, if you went to their website, the BLM, the official, you know, website, and kind of read through it, at the time it said some very controversial things. My understanding, I haven't checked in a while, that they may have taken some of that down. But at the time, they were promoting a queer-affirming network, various sexual identity, gender expression. They wanted to get rid of the Western prescribed nuclear family structure. They called for a national defunding of police, etc. Now, about 2 years ago, slightly more than 2 years ago, I gave a sermon on Black Lives Matter and kind of went through the website and talked about a lot of things. And I don't necessarily want to, you know, rehash all that. But just as a reminder, you know, do Black Lives Matter? Absolutely. As we'll see in a few moments from a scriptural perspective, whether they're, you know, victims of brutality or neighborhood store owners that have their businesses burned down or black police officers who get attacked or blacks killed by other blacks or aborted black children, etc. Black lives matter, absolutely. And went on to point out that all lives matter from that perspective, you know, from a biblical, spiritual racism perspective. Acts 17, verse 26, talks about God made from one blood every nation. 2 Peter 3, verse 9, is long-suffering, not willing that any should perish, but that all should come to repentance. So that makes perfect sense. Black lives matter, all lives matter, no room for racism. In fact, other scriptures talk about loving your neighbor as yourself, God showing no partiality, Acts 10, 34, judging or condemning others, Romans 14, 10. So from a scriptural perspective, is it okay to, you know, riot, loot, arson, vandalism, or as some of the website claims, promote, you know, free sexual expression, disrupt the family, defund the police and authority, civil authority, pull down monuments, etc.? Or is the scriptural perspective, we can exercise our civil rights and responsibilities, which Paul certainly did as an approved example. Should we be showing sexual restraint? And again, this is another summary chart from that sermon. Should we have stable families? Should we respect authority? Should we love our neighbor? From the scriptural perspective that we looked at, you know, 2 years ago, and that sermon is on the website that you can listen to. Not the stuff on the left, definitely the stuff on the right, from a scriptural perspective. So that was the first statement, Black Lives Matter. And again, I didn't want to, you know, rehash that, so I kind of skipped over that. The second statement was, women's rights are human rights. Now that's attributed to Hillary Clinton back in 1995, at a UN conference on women. And per one website's kind of, you know, view or summary, if you will, here's what she said, in part. You know, we are all entitled to human rights. These include the right to live free from violence and discrimination, to enjoy the highest attainable standard of physical and mental health, to be educated, to own property, to vote, to earn an equal wage. Sounds good. Makes sense. But she went on to say, both women and men are entitled to a range of protections, okay, personal freedoms, okay, the right to determine freely the number and spacing of the children they bear. It is a violation of human rights when women are denied the right to plan their own families. What's she talking about there? Well, basically, that's an advocating of abortion. And what some people have done is apply that to basically abortion on demand. Any reason, no reason. You know, up to the point of birth as a quote-unquote constitutional right as guaranteed under Roe versus Wade. Which, you may be aware of, has recently been overturned by the Supreme Court and turned now back to the states to make a decision on abortion, abortion restrictions, etc. So what sounds good, women's rights or human rights, has been leveraged basically to teach abortion on demand. Alan taught a sermon on this earlier this year back in May. Likewise, that's on the website. Since 1973, roughly 63, and some of this is from his sermon summary, 63 million, this says abortions, I'll say babies, somehow disguised as fetus clump of cells, not really human, and some people would have, I found references to calling it a parasite versus an unborn child. Psalms 139, 13 through 16, to start getting the scriptural, spiritual perspective, says, for you formed my inward parts. A lot of other scriptures, beginning with Genesis 15, verse 11, 2 Samuel 11, 5, 2 Kings 15, Ecclesiastes 11, Hosea 13, Amos 1, etc., 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 talk about women who were with child, meaning what we would call they were pregnant, and yet described as having a child. Luke 1, verses 42 through 44 talks about the babe or baby leaping in Elizabeth's womb, John the Baptist, who would go on to become known as John the Baptist, for joy. Another chart that Alan had, I think, in his package, talks about cause and effect, that in a lot of cases, people commit fornication, unwanted children are a result, and in both the Old Testament, in the context of idolatry, current times, in the context of unwanted children, and a way of getting rid of them. And although the names have changed, the motives and practices basically are the same. Abortion on demand. Third phrase, no human is illegal. I wonder what that means. If you look that up on the internet, in general, it's associated with borders, border policy, southern border, immigration, etc. Currently with all the political unrest, economic, social unrest in Central and South America, there's a lot of movement, if you will, for people to try and flee that, poverty, political expression, etc., recognizing the United States as a much better place than where they are now. Also, at the same time, the United States has been somewhat of a beacon, if you will, for people who want a better life, as is typified with the Statue of Liberty, a gift given to us by the French, on its, my understanding is, inscription on the statue talks about, as if personifying the United States in this statue, give me your tired, your poor, your huddled masses learning to be free. Sounds good. But no human is illegal is implying a disregard for law. Words have meanings. Undocumented versus illegal immigration. along with, in unfortunately, a lot of cases, drug trafficking, sex trafficking, terrorists, etc. Now, one of the things that the scriptures reminds us, Romans 13, talks about let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. The authorities that exist are appointed by God. Therefore, whoever resists the authority resists the ordinance of God, and those who resist will bring judgment on themselves. Key point being, no human is illegal is implying open borders, which goes against current law, and allowing people to come in illegally. There are legal ways, yes, but we want to disregard the law under this advocacy of no human is illegal. Next phrase, science is real. What does that mean? Well, certainly science is, science and physics and engineering is a foundation to our modern society and all different kinds of, benefits that we derive from science, medicine, research, etc. And, science is real. Okay, that sounds good. But if you dig beneath the surface, this saying often, not always, often, is used to mean more. Science is real. Religion is not. That's what it means in some cases. I found, which is kind of interesting, on the internet, a kid's video by the name of, you guessed it, Science is Real. Here are the lyrics. Science is real. From the Big Bang to DNA, science is real. From evolution to the Milky Way. I like stories about angels and unicorns and elves. Now I like those stories as much as anybody else. But when I'm seeking knowledge, either simple or abstract, the facts are with science. Kids video. Let that sink in for a little bit. Science is real, meaning religion is not. Now, when I hear science is real and some of the items from the kids' lyrics, we are asked to believe that the universe created itself. In fact, as an interesting side note, there was recently launched a NASA satellite by the name of the James Webb Telescope. Unlike the Hubble Telescope that looks out at the stars in the universe in the visible light spectrum, James Webb looks out into the universe in the infrared, measuring like heat kind of thing. And some of the early findings of James Webb has the astrophysics community in a tizzy, because the data that's starting to come in is starting to contradict some of their predictions from the Big Bang, or associated with the Big Bang. Not to really get too far into the details, but it's like, based on the numbers and their assumptions about, how light travels and dimness of stars and all that sort of stuff, how you measure distances, and looking back in time, the further out you look, they allegedly are starting to see galaxies that are fully formed before the Big Bang. Or, I said that wrong, I'm sorry. Galaxies that are fully formed and mature shortly after the Big Bang, too soon after the Big Bang, not enough time after the Big Bang for them to... Who knows how that'll sort itself out? But believing the universe created itself from nothing. Yeah. Science. How about evolution? That went from a non-living collection of soup to something that was living. And I see a typo. Evolution from non-life to life. How about evolution from cells dividing to in an asexual way to male and female. How that? That's science? Of course, with science, there is no supernatural. No God, angels, judgment day, heaven, hell. With science, there's a lot of claims about, you know, climate change, and humanity absolutely is responsible for the climate change. These call it global warming. Now they call it climate change. And that we are going to destroy the planet unless we slam on the brakes and take a hard turn. Science. And even more recently, after the sign was made, within the last couple years, this is, I'll admit, this is one that personally kind of irritates me. Calling these things vaccines. The COVID-19 vaccines. You know, like polio vaccine, smallpox vaccine. You know, you take the vaccine and then you're protected, immune from it. That's what science called vaccines. Not science. Anyway, science is real. What does that mean? Too often it means, and religion is not. Next phrase, again, highly controversial. Love is love. Love is love. Ooh, what does that mean? Well, okay, scripturally, 1 John 4:8, God is love. Matthew 22:39, love your neighbor. Luke 6:27, love your enemies, even. Colossians 3:8, put off all these things, anger, wrath, malice. Love is love. Well, that sounds good. Until you go to the internet, go to Google, type in love is love. Guess what you get? This is what you get. That in a narrow sense, love is love refers to homosexuality. In a broader sense, love is love refers to anyone, anywhere, anytime, with anyone else. Freedom of expression. If you love the person, well, that is love. And of course, from a biblical perspective, at least from an older King James terminology perspective, we would say, oh, by love is love, what you're saying is fornication is okay. And of course, that flies in the face of multiple scriptures, including Matthew 19, verses 4 and 5, where Jesus, being asked a question about marriage and divorce, goes back to, guess where? Genesis. Have you not read that he who made them at the beginning made them male and female, and said, for this reason a man shall leave his father and mother and shall be joined to his wife, and the two shall become one flesh? Romans chapter 1, verses 26 and 27, by contrast. For this reason, God gave them up to vile passions. I think, if I remember correctly, that this is New King James terminology. Gave them up to vile passions, for even their women exchanged the natural use for what is against nature. Likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, burned in their lust for one another, men with men committing what is shameful. It doesn't say homosexuality, but it certainly describes it. How about Hebrews chapter 13, verse 4? Marriage is honorable among all, and the bed undefiled, but fornicators and adulterers God will judge. Love is love? Now, as I said, in general, you look that up on the internet, and first and foremost association is with homosexuality. And really, I hesitate to use the word homosexuality, because it really encompasses an ever-expanding universe of letters that correspond to all different kinds of sexual behaviors, sexual inclinations, sexual partners, etc. The LGBTQIA blah, 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 plus of these kinds of things. I haven't seen a lot associated with this from a, well, I have a lot from multiple partners. I haven't seen people taking up the banner of polygamy yet. That's probably coming. And such. Including those who claiming that they are in a quote-unquote loving, committed relationship. Two men, two women, etc. Love is love. What does that mean? Well, if you translate it, it tends to mean, yeah, fornication's okay. I think it's the last phrase, if I remember correctly. Kindness is everything. What does that mean? Well, scripturally speaking, Luke chapter 6, verse 35, similar to love, love your enemies, do good, and lend, and you will be sons of the Most High, for he is kind to the unthankful and evil. Kindness. 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 4, love suffers long, is kind, does not envy, or love does not envy, does not parade itself, is not puffed up. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32, and be kind to one another. Brian, edit out this part. My apologies. Sorry for those who could not hear that. Okay. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 32. And be kind to one another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God in Christ forgave you. Kindness is everything. Well, that sounds good. Right? But if you dig under the surface a little bit, in some ways, what that can mean is an endorsement of sin. Now, we hear a lot these days about embracing diversity, celebrating diversity. We are against hate speech. And yet, at the same time, we hear charges of, and I can easily see some people charging this sermon and charging me with being intolerant, homophobic, transphobic, racist, sexist, etc. Even though we're supposed to be celebrating diversity, unless you speak out against these things. How about Romans chapter 1, verse 32? Again, back to the context of the Gentiles who abandoned God. Who, knowing the righteous judgment of God, that those who practice such things are deserving of death. No. We're not living under a theocracy. We can't go out, should not go out and kill people. That's wrong. Not only do the same, but also approve of those who practice them. How about Ephesians chapter 5, verse 11? Have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness, but rather expose them. Kindness is everything. Now, on the one hand, that does have an element of truth, right? We should be kind. But not to the point of endorsing and encouraging sin as Christians. So let's kind of bring it all back and kind of summarize quickly. Sounds good, but. So there's our original sign. And again, my apologies for the font coloring. Black Lives Matter, women's rights are human rights, no human is illegal. Science is real, love is love, kindness is everything. And of course, all that's led in by in this house we believe these things. But I think what we've seen in a lot of cases, there's more to it than that. And I'm not saying everyone who has this sign subscribes to all the things here and to the implication. That certainly seems to be the case. But if you dig beneath the surface, the people in this house, in most cases, seem to be believing anti-law, anti-police, abortion on demand, a disregard for civil law, that religion is not really real, that fornication is okay, and that we should be kind to people, even to the point of endorsing sin. As I said, highly political charged, highly emotional charged. On the surface, a lot of these things make sense. But when you start digging underneath at some of the implications, particularly from a scriptural perspective, it's not good. So, conclusion. As we said, there are a lot of current events that are really highly charged, political, emotional, social, that also have a spiritual dimension or that are also spiritual issues. And if you kind of boil it down, in a lot of cases, many involve people kind of doing what they want to do without any sort of religious or spiritual restraint. And yet, as Christians, we need to recognize that there is a God, a supreme being, created the universe, and that what he has told us, his revelation, must shape our perspectives. In some ways, what we see today, as Ecclesiastes says, nothing new under the sun, Isaiah chapter 5, verse 20, woe to those who call evil good and good evil, who put darkness for light and light for darkness. Or how about Proverbs verses 14, 34? Righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. So now we come all the way back around, finally, to the psalm Robert led before the sermon. How about an alternative sign for in this house we believe? You know where I'm going. How about this? As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua 24:15. That's the lesson. As I said, indeed it is, within our culture today, highly polarizing, highly emotional, highly divisive. Hopefully, what I've been able to do today is show you the scriptural, biblical perspective that should inform our attitudes, our emotions, should inform the way we deal with people. And hopefully, another disclaimer, nothing in here has been presented that gives you the feeling that you can go out and verbally abuse, physically abuse, persecute, etc., anyone who holds these kinds of perspectives. You do not have that right. In fact, that's wrong. Because indeed, true love, biblical love, would have us do what's best for the other person, which includes trying to reach them. The sermon today really hasn't been much about first principles in terms of salvation. But as we always try to do, we do offer an invitation. That invitation is based on a person who wishes to become a Christian. And we can talk more about that and what that involves, if that's appropriate, afterwards. Those who have succumbed to sin in a public way, and wish to make public acknowledgement of that, or people who are merely struggling with sin and wish to make acknowledgement of that and ask for help and support. Whatever the case might be, we offer this invitation at the present time. If you'll now stand and sing.